I'm Colleen,
and this is your friendly neighborhood podcast about living in Iraq,
where we both lived for a combined 11 years.
That's right. So we know all the things.
Except for the things we bring in the guests for. So this week, our topic is clothing.
Yeah, I feel like that's one of the things we get asked about the most when we initially start going is, what do you wear? And usually people either asked, do you have to wear a burqa or do you have to cover your hair?
Yeah, or cover your head.
And I mean, it's a reasonable question. Most Americans kind of have this picture in their mind that every woman in the Middle East wears a burqa.
It's just kind of, this homogenous looking like completely covered group of people.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's only true in Taliban-run Afghanistan, which is not near Iraq. There's a whole country between Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah.
In case you're not up on your Middle Eastern geography, they're not close to each other. But yeah, so we thought we'd talk about the kind of different head coverings that women wear, and then what we wear, and then kind of what men wear, I guess.
Yeah.
Which we know the least about. Aside from observation.
So probably the most conservative clothing really is the burqa that you are familiar with, maybe from Taliban-run areas of Afghanistan or even some places, I think, in Saudi Arabia, where they're completely covered from head to foot and there's like a mesh screen over their eyes.
Yeah, and they just kind of look like a walking bedsheet.
Yeah.
Blue, usually.
I never saw anyone dressed like that in northern Iraq.
Yeah, me neither. And even in some of the reading that I've done since then, it was really kind of a Taliban-specific thing. Mm-hmm. Like, most of the rest of the Muslim world is like, no, we don't. That's crazy. That's too far. So I think the next most conservative would be the niqab, which is kind of the classic Middle Eastern women, face veil thing where their head and their hair is all covered and all you can see is their eyes.
Yeah, and it's usually all black or some other dark color. Yeah.
And I did see someone dressed like that in Iraq.
Really?
I never did. In a shopping mall, and I was with some of my students and they were like, oh, look at them. They're from Saudi Arabia. Only the Saudis dress their women like that. And it was very, very disdainful, like, her poor repressed life, having to live behind this, curtain over her face.
I mean, that's the same way a lot of Americans talk about all Middle Eastern women being covered. That same sort of disdain and oppression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I guess maybe there are just levels.
Yeah,
so those are probably the two most, and never saw a Kurd wearing anything like that.
No. The more conservative Kurds would wear the abaya with kind of the hijab underneath. Mm-hmm. So they'd have their whole head and neck covered and then have a black kind of cape, long flowing thing.
Just like one long piece of black fabric.
Yeah. And
that's the abaya.
And I really only saw that on older women, walking around in the neighborhood.
Yeah.
And every now and then, sometimes they wouldn't even have the full head covering on underneath it. They would just walk around with the black abaya piece, over their head and, kind of flows out behind them like a cape when they walk.
It always reminded me of the old style Catholic nun habit.
Yeah.
And so, in my mind, it was just oh, yeah, nuns, gotcha. And most women who wore any of those styles of covering usually also wear gloves to cover their hands and closed-toed shoes or sandals with black stockings. The only skin that you see is their face. And yeah, that was pretty common. Again, usually with older women. I didn't see very many younger, my age or younger, wearing it.
And I mean, even then, it still wasn't super common.
Yeah, I think I saw it more in Dahuk. They're a little bit more traditional and conservative in Dahuk. So I saw it a lot more. But yeah, usually on older grandmother-y types.
Yeah.
Probably the most conservative thing that younger women would wear is the hijab, which is the covering that covers the basically from your neck up, leaving only your face. So none of your hair is showing at all. And it always looked really tight to me.
Yeah, it's like usually pretty tight. But most of that fabric is stretchy.
Yeah.
So it's like a stretchy piece that goes over your head and your neck.
Mm-hmm.
And then usually another kind of
like
decorative
a scuba
scarf.
Cap.
Yeah, a scuba cap. But like then a scarf is put over the top of that mm-hmm. and pinned on and wrapped, you know, that's
beautifully
pretty and matches mm-hmm. their outfit. Yeah. And what the women wear with that can be either something more conservative that's like flowy and
hides their shape.
Or I also met, especially like teenage girls mm-hmm. or younger women who would wear that and then have like absolutely skin tight jeans and a long sleeve t-shirt, like, right. or something that was fancy, a blouse or something, and like have it just be really, really tight and form fitting.
So following the letter of the law, but not the spirit of the law.
Right.
As it were.
All the skin was covered, mm-hmm. but not much was left to the imagination.
Yeah. Which is why there was an abundance of scarves available to buy, I think. Because mm-hmm. a lot of them will also layer and do two scarves and do, like, really cool foldy patterns or, like...
Some of them are gorgeous.
Yeah, some of them are really interesting. And just, like, their ability to combine color and be creative with it mm-hmm. And kind of use it as self-expression was always really interesting to me. And I do also want to say that that style of head covering varies a little bit from culture to culture. Mm-hmm. And we don't have time in this podcast to get into all the different styles of it. Because generally, in Iraq, it was just close to the head, covering the neck. But I know, like, other cultures do, like, turbans, or they have, it's a little bit looser, still covering all the hair and the face and everything, but it's more like a hood that they wear.
And then I would say there's one also more that I saw in Iraq that was a little bit less common, more common during, like, the month of Ramadan, where someone who didn't normally cover their head would just kind of drape a scarf over the top mm-hmm. of their hair, like, loosely, not even pinned on. Like, you could still see some of the front of their hair. And that was also something that some of the women I knew wore. And they would even, you know, pull it off or, you know, adjust it and mess with it and put it back on.
Mm-hmm.
In public.
Yeah. I feel like that one was the most common that I ran into, especially among Kurds, and the younger women, I guess, is just, yeah, a pretty scarf that they put over their hair. And their hair is usually up. It's not out and tumbly under the scarf because that would be hot. But yeah, I feel like that was the most common one. They're dressed like, if they're just scarved, it was kind of all over the place. Still conservative by U.S. standards.
Right. I mean, you'd never probably see their knees or their elbows.
Right. But they wear fancy shoes and bright colors, but probably the majority of almost all of our students anyway, didn't cover.
Right. And most of the teachers, even at the school I was at in Suli, didn't mm-hmm. cover either.
I'd say that's probably true in Hawler, less true in Dahuk.
Yeah. So even within the range of Kurdistan, there's a continuum of how conservative overall, mm-hmm. you know, the people are and stuff. And yeah. So as a result, neither of us ever, at least regularly, wore a headscarf.
I mean,
I think I had one of my students teach me how to put one on once uh-huh. for fun, but we didn't wear them. In fact, one of our good friends told us that if we did wear a headscarf there, people would mm-hmm. assume that we had converted to Islam,
yeah.
Because for us to make that step, like, must show some sort of religious devotion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and if you talk to, like, if I talk to my Muslim students or Muslim friends about it, and because when I first got there, I was kind of like, should I do this? And I asked one of the teachers, and she was like, no, why would you? You're a Christian. Christians don't cover their head. It's not a big deal. And I was like, okay. She was like, even if I go into, like, conservative, like, more traditional areas, and she was like, no. Don't cover your head. It's like, all right, I'll do what you say. So I think the most conservative I ever got was I would put my hair in a ponytail or, like, braid it so that it was up and off my neck. But that was more for comfort as far as, like, it was hot.
Yeah. And, I mean, so many of the women there have such long and gorgeous hair that it is kind of seen that if it's down and loose and moving and flowing, that it can be seen as seductive or...
Flirtatious,
calling attention to yourself. And so we generally, partly, again, for practicality's sake, and also partly out of... you know, a conservative appearance, we put it up.
And I don't like to have my hair touched. And so if I went down with, if I went out with my hair down, some woman inevitably would touch my hair because it's blonde and it's soft and it's just
too tempting. They want to know what number.
Right.
What's your number?
Yes.
What number of dye do you use to color your hair this magnificent color? And you're like,
it just is that way.
God did this.
I also got asked what shampoo I used because I have such fine hair that they were like, how did you get your hair so soft? And I was like, I just wash it.
It grows like, out of my head this way.
Comes out this way. I will say, though, that to some extent, most general rules of dress get thrown out the window when there's a party.
True.
Especially a wedding, but I've seen it for other parties as well.
Right, because you could wear Jilly Curdy to parties.
Which we have talked about. If you haven't listened to the Now Rose episode, go back, find that, listen to it. You'll know what a Jilly Curdy is.
You can also wear what would often be seen as a Western-style formal clothing, complete with strapless dresses and... sequins and even sometimes short things, like depending on the group you're with and the type of, you know, there's all sorts of cultural rules that you don't know going in, but like even the bride, I've known brides who wore a hijab normally and would never let, you know, anything above their wrists or ankles show, wear their hair down and loose and a strapless bridal gown, like...
the bigger and poofier, the better.
Exactly. To, like, at their wedding in public.
Yep.
And it's just like, I don't think I've ever seen your hair before. Look at that.
And maybe most of it is not all their hair.
That's true.
This was one thing I had to get used to, is that there's a lot of hair extensions to make your hair long and full and beautiful. I've never put hair extensions in my hair ever. And so sometimes I was like, wow, you have so much hair. I never knew. And they'd be like, yeah, it's not all my hair. I was like, okay.
Oh.
Would have never crossed my mind. But yeah, even the guests, I didn't see a lot of high slitted things.
Mm-mm.
But yeah, like knee length dresses were not uncommon. Tight dresses were not uncommon. I also want to say, too, that there's a distinction between the ethnically Christian community and the Muslim community.
Right.
Which can be confusing when you're first there because you don't have that automatic, like, I can look at you or hear your name and know, like, oh, you must be Christian. And so that can be a little bit like, wait a minute.
Yeah.
Why?
Because the rules for Christians are far different than the rules for Muslims there. The identifying characteristic for Christians was like, oh, they can drink alcohol and wear short skirts. And you're like, oh, that's weird.
And short skirts still means like knee length.
Knee length, right.
It's not like people are running around in mini skirts and spaghetti straps.
But they're showing off those calves.
Yes. I had a younger student, she was probably in fourth grade, show up for a field trip in short overalls that were pretty short, but she had tights on underneath them.
Yeah, okay.
So, like, she kind of got away with it, but still all the teachers were like, should we really let her, like, her parents let her come to school like this? But, I mean, it was definitely very scandalous.
Yeah.
She was, like, 11, maybe.
But that's still...
That's definitely... Like, that's right on the age of,
getting,
like,
into that age of, like, oh, this isn't allowed anymore. I think nine is definitely where it, culturally it seems to switch over.
And I think that depends family to family, too. Because I know families that would have their young daughters scarf.
Yeah. Yeah, I had a second grader that wore a headscarf to school. Yeah.
For the most part, though, my students would only have their heads covered if they were fasting for Ramadan.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't always mean just during Ramadan. Again, if you listen to our Ramadan podcast, you can make up days that you have missed for Ramadan. And so if they were fasting makeup days, they would also have their heads covered.
Right.
But we never did. So now that we're, you know, into this, we should talk about what we wear or wore.
Or we tried to be on the more conservative side of things and not necessarily follow the same traditions and expectations associated with Christians, mm-hmm. because especially as white women, or even any of our team members that were ethnically Asian or African American, like, we're all seen as more loose, mm-hmm. And as, you know, potentially there as prostitutes, you know, so we wanted to really protect against that reputation and not invite that kind of attention.
Yeah, so I usually wore, I mean, to school, dress professionally, but even just going to the corner grocery store, I would still dress more nicely than I would if I was, you know, running to Kroger here in Nashville. But yeah, kind of nicer blouses or shirts that mm-hmm. were at least three-quarter sleeves.
Yeah, three-quarter sleeves and pants or skirts that are at least, you know, mid-shin or longer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I took, like, capris, I think, my first year, and I wore them a couple times, but then was kind of like, eh, no, I'm going to go back to just pants.
Yeah. Also tended to wear looser shirts mm-hmm. and longer shirts. Mm-hmm. Things that even cover over your rear end and don't show off any sort of curves or definition.
Yeah. And I feel like I went to Iraq at just the right time in U.S. fashion when tunics were becoming, like, cool.
Yeah, I was excited about that. That was not the case when I first went.
Yeah, but when you can get, like, a fun, colorful, flowery, long-sleeve, long-bodied shirt.
Yeah.
Those were the days, man.
Those were good days. But I also wore sandals.
Mm-hmm.
I wore, I mean, little bits of jewelry, but, I mean, that's kind of my style anyway.
Right. When I was in Haller, I would wear shorter things, like above my elbow, because they are a little bit more westernized, free, less conservative, but almost never into hook. And if I wore, like, a maxi skirt,
mm-hmm.
I would usually wear tights underneath it, too, just because getting in and out of a taxi in a skirt, it's impossible to keep your ankles covered.
Yeah.
So if I wore leggings underneath it, it was usually good.
I think that was an interesting difference with the Suli environment, because there wasn't already an ethnic Christian community there. In some ways, they didn't have the same influence even as Haller,
mm-hmm.
and how, yeah, I generally kept a three-quarter length sleeves there. I didn't mind my ankles too much. Definitely kept track of midriff, you know, if there was mm-hmm. any sort of shirt shortness or untucking that could happen. Right. You definitely didn't want that.
Right.
Always wore undershirts tucked in. And
yep. The whole hallelujah test, you know, if you put your hands up on your shirt, if you can see skin, your shirt's too short. That's doubly true.
Yeah.
Because you don't even want any of the skin in the middle of your body showing ever.
Ever. And I mean, for some days I remember, especially with the younger students, or if I was helping out with the kindergarten or something, you know, I'm getting up and down off the ground and mm-hmm. just had to be really careful about, you know, things that I would do in life that mm-hmm. would maybe cause skin to show or shirts to gap or, you know, the bend over test to see if, you know, you can see straight down your shirt, especially with the looser clothing. Sometimes that ends up being a problem. Mm-hmm. And that also is complete no-no.
Right. Which is where the scarf buying came in handy for me, because in the winter especially, I would just wear scarves.
Around my neck.
Around my neck. It covered everything. I didn't have to think about it as much. But even in the summer or in the late fall, I would get the lighter weight scarves uh-huh. and still wear those, because it was just like, I can tolerate being hot, but I'm not going to remember to make sure to, like, sometimes it can be tricky to find a shirt that is both long in the bottom and high enough
in the top part. Yeah. You can only put so much fabric in a shirt, Hannah.
It's true.
If you make it longer, you got to cut it out at the top.
It's true. I needed, what are those things called? The, like, fake shirt fronts that people used to wear that are just, like, that just go like right below your pectorals at the most. Yeah, you could get one of those like belly shirts and wear that underneath the shirt, maybe. No, that's a bad idea
because you still got a lot of undershirts, camisoles.
Yeah, I bought like extra long tank tops.
Yep.
And would wear those because those will stay tucked in.
Mm-hmm. Also, the joy of the layering fashion helped with that. Mm-hmm.
Yes, I learned a lot about layering, I will say.
Mm-hmm.
I also learned or started wearing a lot more jewelry because they do like their sparkly jewelry.
They do like their sparkly jewelry, and I got given enough of it, so mm-hmm. I did start wearing more of it too, but...
Or if I went to school and I didn't have earrings in, someone would comment, like, oh, you're not wearing earrings today. Why? Just like, because I forgot. Like, I don't always put in earrings.
Yeah. Which makes me think of one of the other dress characteristics with women is makeup.
Mm-hmm.
And the same way, like, the less conservative you are, the more makeup you will wear from the... Obviously, if your face is completely covered. I don't know. Maybe I think Afghan women still wear makeup for each other.
I mean, probably.
Underneath. But in the ladies I knew in Iraq, you know, the older women, you know, who are wearing the abayas, like, they don't normally wear a lot of makeup. But the younger you get, the less conservative you get, the more makeup, the darker, mm-hmm. the brighter.
I felt like there was especially a lot of... playing up of the eyes.
Yes.
Because it was like the one thing that they were allowed to be flirtatious with, maybe? I don't know. To draw attention to, that's not like scandalous.
I think you could still get a reputation for that.
Yeah, I guess so.
I remember before I lived in Iraq, I didn't wear much makeup mm-hmm. most of the time. And I continued that for quite a while. And then like some days I just wouldn't wear makeup. And the kids are like, Miss, are you okay? You look sick. And I'm like, well, I guess maybe I should wear the makeup.
I never really got into it.
It
gets so hot and you just sweat it all off anyway. I will never do a makeup tutorial YouTube channel. Let me just put it that out there. No, it's not gonna happen.
I don't think I will either.
The only other thing I will say is that shoes became really important to me.
Oh yeah.
Because the floors are all hard concrete and...
Gotta have some comfy shoes. And that includes house slippers.
Yeah. Comfy, rubber-soled, warm house slippers for the winter and good flip-flops for the rest of the year.
Because otherwise, your ankles and your knees and your hips all end up hurting.
I went out and bought the, like, nurse's shoes, like dance clothes or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Those things. It changed my life and made me
because you're also, as a teacher, walking and standing on the concrete all day long.
Yeah.
Going up and down all those stairs. And, which is not the kind of shoes most of the women there wear.
That's true.
That was a definite cultural divergence for me. Because they wear stiletto high heels and strappy shoes mm-hmm. and all the glitz and glam that they can possibly fit on their feet.
Yep.
It goes there.
Yeah. Like, even kindergarten teachers who, like you were saying, are up and down and in and out and running around, they can do more in high heels than I think I can do not in high heels.
We eventually managed to convince the students not to wear high heels on the hiking trips.
Yeah. I got made fun of for my Santa Claus shoes.
That's perfect.
And got asked many times why I never wore heels. And I was just like, I'm not graceful enough. That's why.
Yeah.
Will fall over and break my face. Shoes are a good place to start talking about what men wear.
Because that's the biggest difference in men's clothing, I think.
It's not... maybe.
I mean, there are other differences. But the shoes that the men wear are shiny. And pointy.
Yes.
Like, shiny and pointy. And, like, have you ever seen... I don't know, it's the Middle Eastern, like... Aladdin with the uh-huh. like the tipped up shoes uh-huh. and the bell. I know it's like part of the Ottoman Empire's yeah. you know, royalty and stuff too. I feel like it's all just related to that.
Yeah,
it's a little less than that, so it's slightly more practical,
but they're still like super pointy
and long.
In the US I only see women's shoes that are that pointy and long, like yeah. to make their feet look longer, I guess. But yeah, men's shoes. And even shoes that normally in the U.S. we would not make shiny, like the dress casual, like suede style shoes, mm-hmm. they would still make them shiny.
All of them are shiny.
Shiny was a big deal.
Shiny is the most important thing for shoes.
Yeah, because if your shoes aren't shiny, you're less of a man?
I don't know.
There was also a lot of skinny jean wearing or skinny pants.
And kind of the shiny extended through the pants and to the shirt.
And the hair.
Lots of shiny. So yes. A lot of dressed up shirts, often with a shiny sheen to the fabric, mm-hmm. really shiny buttons.
Yeah. Yeah.
Really fitted.
To the point of being like, dude, you should have bought just a size up.
Yeah.
Like, you do fit in that shirt, but don't need too much.
Somehow, like, that slight pull on the buttons mm-hmm. was considered attractive, I think. I don't know.
Look at my manly chest hair.
yeah. Often, a few buttons unbuttoned.
Yes.
Maybe
a gold chain. Christian guys always had a cross.
There you go.
Which is not to say that all the men dress like that all the time. Like, there definitely is a standard of, like, if you're working in a professional environment, you wear a suit.
Yes.
I will say they were not all, like, the American standard of, like, navy blue or charcoal or black. Like, there were some brown suits in there and green. They got a little more creative with their colors. But, yeah, it was not uncommon to see men in suits and ties, especially in a professional environment.
Right, yeah.
But, you know, you're walking down the street going to the grocery store and there's some teenage punk in his pointy shoes and super tight jeans and shiny shirt and his hair all spiked straight up.
Or, like, gelled in the swoopy thing.
Yes.
Like, it's all just solid gel, mm-hmm. no matter what the style is. Solid gel.
Yeah. That's why I think I was a little surprised to read that article about the gentlemen's group who, like, are snappy dressers and have, like, hipster beards and hair, and mm-hmm. they don't like to be called hipsters. I was like, where were those guys? Like, I never saw anyone dressed that way.
There's a little bit of similarity, though, because just that extraordinary care for appearance is pretty universal among men there.
That is true.
Which I think in the U.S., it's considered often cool for men not to care about their appearance.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. That doesn't really happen there.
I will say, I did notice that almost all the men I interacted with had very well-maintained hands.
Hmm.
I think partly I noticed because I wasn't allowed to look in their face, so I'd look at their hands. Also, just like, yeah, they take really good care of the way that they present themselves, mm-hmm. which is different and better in some ways, I think. I mean, I don't want the shiny shoes, shiny shirt thing to become a thing in the U.S., but I feel like we could all step up our game a little bit in how we present ourselves to the world.
Yeah. But I will say, too, the older men generally didn't wear those kinds of clothes. They would wear suits in the professional environment, mm-hmm. but older men around the homes would wear more traditional clothing and the jilly-curdy pants. And because it's more subtle in its color scheme and mellow, I think it was a lot easier for them just to have that as their house clothing.
Yeah. Yeah, and they would wear it out, too. Mm-hmm. Like, a nicer version of that. But, yeah, even the guys who are, like, house builders would be wearing jilly-curdy, but not, like, fancy jilly-curdy.
No.
Just, like, traditional style pants and maybe a button-down white shirt or something.
Right. And they would also tend to wear the traditional Kurdish shoe.
Oh, yeah.
Which is woven.
Yes. It almost looks like crocheted.
Yeah.
Almost. But they're white.
Yeah. Well, at least new.
Right. New, they are white.
And you're supposed to buy them, like,
fairly thick sole.
A thick sole.
Like, they seem like really sturdy shoes.
They're sturdy shoes. They last a long time. You're supposed to buy them, like, two sizes too small, and then, like, they stretch out with your feet in them. I could never manage to convince myself to buy that type of shoe and wear them
long enough to
stretch them out.
I mean, that makes sense. If they're woven, they should stretch.
Yeah. You can buy in the bazaar little tiny keychain versions of them that are, you can either hang on your Christmas tree or
just keep on your keychain. Keep your keys. And they would dress kids like that too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kids for the most part were just miniature versions of the adults in their family.
Yeah.
Girls wore a lot of pink and frilly things for events, but generally ran around in whatever they felt like. I feel like it wasn't until, probably 9 or 10 that parents start kind of caring a bit more about what their girls particularly wear. Boys, for the most part, run around in soccer jerseys and, you know. And
pants.
Jeans or sometimes, not usually shorts, but like athletic
pants. Yeah. I mean, what women wear in the home is either the maxi dress or dish dasha, or a velour tracksuit, which, I mean, they're really comfy and warm, so I can totally get that.
In my house, I wore whatever I wanted to.
Yeah.
Because I was like, this is America in here.
In my house. Yoga pants, t-shirt.
I mean, I brought, like, basketball shorts.
Tracksuit.
To hang around in. Make sure all my window curtains were closed, but, yeah, I would hang out in my shorts and tank top.
There were enough people in and out of my house on a regular basis that there were some days we hung out in shorts in our house because it was just so hot. But those were invariably the days that like something would happen. But I'd often wear a tank top in the house with like a blouse, like near the door. So then I could put something on if someone came to the door.
Yep. I had a maxi skirt that I would keep by the door. So that if someone came, I could just pull it on over my shorts and be like, yes, I'm wearing a long skirt and a t-shirt. What's it to you?
You know, they probably didn't even notice.
They probably didn't. Also, we almost forgot to talk about this, but you will get asked about your clothes, not your clothes.
In Iraq, yeah.
So I was like, look, miss, look at my clothes. Aren't they nice clothes? And it's like, what? Your clothes.
It's really a hard blend to make clothes.
It is. You're not wrong.
But yes.
But so now, from here on out, you have our permission to say clothes.
Clothes.
And we'll know exactly what you're talking about.
Servant Group International on Facebook or Instagram or on our website at servantgroup.org.
Yeah, and if you have a question that we haven't answered yet, send us an email or Facebook message. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks for listening. Probably a lot more nicely than I'm dressed right now, honestly. I'm wearing my podcast clothes of like really comfortable sweatpants and a t-shirt. Don't tell my secrets.